Washington. Please stay tuned for Ethelbert Miller and On the Margin. Please continue to call, support Democracy Now! And ensure that we can continue broadcasting it here on WPFW.
My guest today is Samia Bashir. Samia Bashir is a poet, artist, and educator.
This is Democracy Now!
Her most recent book is I Hope This Helps, published by Night Books. Samia Bashir is the June Jordan Visiting Scholar at Columbia University. How are you doing, Samia? Unmute.
Hi, good morning, Ethelbert. It's really great to be here with you.
Good. We're working through a little technical things, but it's good to see you. You're joining us, Samia. As you heard, we're in the end of our fundraising drive here at the end of the year. And we'll be encouraging people who will be listening to you, our conversation, to call in and make a pledge, 202-588-9739. That's 202-588-9739 or 1-800-222-9739. And around probably maybe 15 minutes into our show, Satira Joyner will probably join us and also help with making a pitch. But I want to start with you, Samia. Your publisher, Night Books, is known for publishing writers whose work resists convention and transcend boundaries. And I wonder, what are the characteristics of your work that resists or moves against convention? And what boundaries are you trying to transcend?
Well, thank you so much, Ethelbert. I think that's such a great question. I want to start with the Night Books part because this is my second book with Night Books. Mm-hmm. And I really love this press. I think they're putting out some of the most exciting work today, right now. It was founded, 20 years ago now by Kazem Ali and Jennifer Chappis. Stephen Motika is the publisher, and he goes out of his way to... your program On the Margins is to pull people from, what might be called the margins and put our work out as beautifully and lovingly as possible. And so there's really nobody better to work with for I Hope This Helps, which is, there's the book, but it's also part of a larger multimedia art project. It's lived in, it's been exhibited. There's the installation exhibit that's been shown in New York, in Michigan, in Rome, et cetera. And a lot of work that is collaborative, a lot of work that is solo. Although one piece in the book says quite clearly, like, solo authorship is a lie. But to be able to take this work, which is really kind of transliterating multimedia poetry practice for the book form, it is taking risks. It is not necessarily traditionally just kind of like, this is text on paper that right. you can turn into poetry. This is something that I'm taking and putting into that form. There is a QR code in the back. You can go and for mm-hmm. the video poetry, you can click, you can see the video poems, you can listen to the choral pieces. You can see some of the visual pieces where I worked with artists like Allison Saar, where I worked with composers like Jill Thompson. And I think that it's important that the work is accessible in its original form. Mm-hmm. And that's whether I'm working with a sonnet or whether I'm working with a video poem.
Well, let's talk about something, Samia Bashir. I like what you're saying, okay? And I like what, about Night Books. But if we look at you in terms of tradition that you find, who are some of the writers that you say, okay, before I was even born, they were pushing these margins back in the 20s or 30s?
20s or 30s. I mean, I can go back from these 20s to the last 20s, right? I mean, it's so funny. People I've been talking about so much, even just this week, more recent than that. I think about Jane Cortez. I think about Wanda Coleman. I think about, obviously June Jordan. I think, when I go back to the 20s, I think about Wallace Stevens. I think about, or Thurman, excuse me. I think about, oh goodness, I don't even know where to start. This is everybody. Mm-hmm. You asked me earlier, and I know we're going to talk about some of the people that I think in the work. And I really think about this work as being in conversation with these last 100 years of people that you're talking.
Now, when I look at night books, you know, if I was receiving your manuscript, I would say, okay, so, I mean, we like this, but we can't do this. You know, the visual, you got musical notation in here, you know. Yeah. I mean, it's too multimedia for us to do, you know. Right. And I just wanted, going back, in terms of looking at your work, and I think of people coming out of MF programs, did you have any difficulty finding someone who's going to meet you halfway and say, okay, I like what you're doing, or did you have to really search around for a publisher?
Well, I mean, I'm very fortunate that Night Boat, you know, after Field Theories, which was my book before this, you know, which did well and won the Oregon Book Award. It's you know, and I think it's a really important book. It's certainly an important book in my work, in my career. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Stephen actually wanted to work with me on the next project. And I'm very fortunate that when I was like, well, here's the next project, this is what we're doing right now. And rather than we can't do this, his response was, how can we do this? Mm-hmm. You know, like, we don't know how to do it. And in fact, I didn't know how to do it. I had to make it up as we went along. Mm-hmm. And they were fortunate. They put me together with Kit Shelter, who was the book designer. And we worked tirelessly, hours and hours and hours and hours over weeks, mm-hmm. putting this together, designing the actual book so that it would recognize how the work needs to
okay.
be.
Okay. In this book, yeah. in the back of this book,
yeah.
I hope this helps. You thank a number of people. Mm-hmm. And I was wondering, you know, a lot of people do that in the acknowledgement. I want to thank this by my teacher, blah, blah, blah. But, I looked at some of the names and I wanted you to say, okay, are these friends or are these people who like influence your work or whatever? And the four people I pulled out of that list, which is mm-hmm. quite a big list, is Erica Hunt, John mm-hmm. Keane, Ronaldo Wilson, and Claudia Rankin. Just talk briefly about those individuals.
Sure. And first of all, what an incredible group to pull out of that list. And to the extent that, yes, this is a large list, that's really what I mean. Like, this book wouldn't exist without every single one of those people. This work wouldn't exist without every single one of these people. And to a lot of extent, my ability to make my work wouldn't exist without these people. And it's not exhaustive. Every now and then I'm like, how did this person not get in the list? You know, I don't understand how I missed that person. But so, yeah, are they friends? Yeah, but influences, absolutely. You know, Ronaldo, gosh, we went to college together, you know, and, okay. you know, over these last 20, 30 years, since then, it's just like his work is absolutely inspired by work. We've been in conversation about so many of these things. Ronaldo actually is perhaps the person who introduced me to Erica Hunt's work many years ago. Her work, her first, the Notes on Oppositional Poetics, I think is critical, critical reading, a critical text for all of us who are really trying to think about how to do this work in a way that not only is its most self, but does, you know, what we need it to do. I really think poetry for me, not for everyone, but for me, I want this work to do something. And the title of this book is I Hope This Helps. Because, you know, it's not just like, I hope it's pretty. I hope it helps. It needs to do something. And so when I get those responses from people saying, gosh, that it really did help. And that's, oh, good. Mm-hmm. Good. You know, Claudia is, you know, I've loved her work for a long time. I know when Citizen first came out, we were like the first people that brought her on campus. And, you know, I was in the middle of finishing the last book. So this was, what, 2016, something like that.
Right.
2015, maybe. And, you know, we just had lunch a couple times and had really great conversation. I was in a really difficult place with the work. Mm-hmm. And she just really gave me some really helpful advice, most of which was about stay, keep going. What you're doing here, this is interesting, this is important. And yeah, I know it's not something that you can paste onto a traditional poetry book, but that's not a barrier. That means you're onto something. Keep going. Mm-hmm. And you know, Erica, grateful. Like when we had the book party for I Hope This Helps, Erica Hunt, Jacqueline Woodson, and Terrence Hayes all came together and engaged with the work. Erica picked one of my pieces and read it so beautifully, performed it really so beautifully and thoughtfully that I was blown away. Terence wrote a whole piece he's publishing somewhere about the Bashirian Ode. It's like the way that these people whose work I so admire, whose existence I so admire. And again, like Terence, I've known like 25 years. These are people you grew up with in poetry. And so, of course, they influence my work. Of course, their work is important to my work. But of course, like all of us as family, as people who are making this work in this world together, that's what helps me breathe.
But, you know, when I look at the, and we were talking about the tradition, and I know many writers don't like to have labels attached to them. Yeah. Someone would probably say, okay, Erica Hunt, Gloria Rankin, yourself, that there's a degree of them being, quote, experimental, you know, Black writers. Okay. Mm-hmm. Some people may never be, well, we're all experimenting, you know, but, you know, at the same time, you know, there has to be a way of saying, for example, if I'm teaching a creative writing course, I'm teaching a literature course on African American literature, there is a big leap from Langston Hughes to your work.
Is there though?
Yes. Well, you know, if I said you're closer to Norman Pritchard or something like that, or Russell Atkins, mm-hmm. Okay, that's a tradition. Okay, I'm not talking County Cullen and Langston. I'm talking, you know, Melvin Tolson or somebody like that. And what I'm saying, it shows you, especially right now, there's this wide tradition. When we talk about African American literature, we can't put everybody in the same box. So I'm asking, okay, like you can see, I pulled out a few names from your acknowledgement, and I said, this seems like an interesting group.
I mean, I think, first of all, you know, I think we get in trouble when we try to work within or outside of a box, first of all, right? And I think when we think about, you know, Black writers, you know, Black Western writers across a canon, whether we're looking at County Cullen, whether we're looking at Nicholas Guillen, who I was just talking to someone about yesterday, whoever it might be, we're all kind of working both within and through a tradition, to some extent against a tradition, you know, because we're speaking this language. I mean, I personally am very clear. I've said, like, I think the English language is probably one of the least poetic languages on the planet. And yet here we are making poetry out of it.
So. Okay, let's go. So we're talking about this. We're going to have a little break in a few minutes. I'm going to bring Satira in to talk to her about and make a pitch for our fundraising. But I want you to read on page 2 of, I hope this helps. You've got a poem that's in Latin here, the title. Throw that out. So why don't you read that poem?
Sure. I mean, the title is Per Aspera, which is part of a phrase, Ad Astra Per Aspera, or To the Stars Through Difficulty. It's on the moon. It's, I believe, the state motto of Nebraska. And I left the stars out. Let's let that be a given. The poem is like, goes like this, and this is what opens the book. Listen, we ain't all well. This world spins designs which madden us, shape us like dough, bake us crisp. There may be those who will crumble us into paving for their own roads. Listen, we mustn't let them, but also, love, we aren't all well. We can't all resist as well as we might. We can't all fight enough or at all, and I can't say how we heal. I wish I could. I would. I'll try.
You're listening to Samira Bashir, and she's reading from her book, I Hope This Helps. I read that poem, Samira, and I immediately thought of The Salt Eaters by Tony K. Bambara. Oh, yeah. And in your book, Field Theories, you quote Bambara, Are You Sure, Sweetheart, That You Want to Be Well? Right. And so I was wondering, talk about your art and life, and do you feel that you're being, that you're not just a writer, but a healer? And I'm looking at that term healer in terms of also bringing in James Baldwin, in where Baldwin talks about being a witness. So here you are. Is there a difference between like a healer, a witness? How do you see yourself in
your
work?
Well, interestingly enough, I do believe that in many cases and ways to witness is part of a healing process, is an offering. A lot of I Hope This Helps. When I that book is not just opens the book, but it really, that sets it. That's what the book is. I'll try. And I think there was a moment in the editing process at the end, you read through these things again and again and again. And I got to the end and I thought, oh my God, I think I did it. Like, which is mind boggling to set something up. Like, I can't say how we heal, but I think maybe I did. And that's critical. Is this healing in some ways Yes. And that's what I hope this book is doing. I've had there's a moment, there's a piece in here, how not to stay unshot in the USA, right? The place where, you know, gunshots is our history and God knows our present. And the exhibition was at Michigan State University. It's a huge piece of cloth with listing dozens and dozens and dozens of ways, average day ways that we've had mass shootings, and Michigan State had one. Mm-hmm. And I worried about triggering these students with this piece. But what actually happened was they came up to me, they're crying, they're saying, thank you. You know, I was a freshman when this happened here, and it's like, we're not supposed to talk about it.
And you can see that relates to what's happening at Brown University today.
Yeah, exactly. And these, you know, students who have now lived through two and three mass school shootings, and yet they're not supposed to talk about it. They're just supposed to get over it and go about their lives like this is normal. And somebody to say, wait, here, I see you. No, this is not okay.
Right.
Yeah, I know you're hurting, right. And you're not alone.
Well, you know, we try to do some healing here at WPFW. And so that's a good segue. I'll bring in Satira, who's here to join us. Satira, are you on the line?
Hey, good morning. Good morning, Elsberg. How are you?
I'm okay.
Good morning, Smith. You're listening to WPFW. I want to give you the phone number to call to make your donation. It's 202-588-9739. You can also go to our website and donate at WPFWFM.org. Cash App us, $ WPFWFM. However you choose to donate, WPFW is always going to be grateful. You know, On the Margin is a wonderful show. Ethelbert, you bring wonderful guests like Samia each and every week. The talented people lending their voices to our airways and educating our audience and exposing our audience to new, interesting artists each week. And we appreciate that because we know that you are volunteering your time.
Yes,
and it is not just the hour that you are hosting this show. I know that it is also the preparation, the research, the all the time it takes to, you know, read these books, figure out which artists you want to reach out to. I can't even imagine how much of your time you're giving to WPFW, and the audience appreciates that. And because you out there listening appreciate it, we know that you're going to help us meet this $500 goal for the hour. Five people donated $100, 10 people giving $50. You can become a sustainer for as little as $10 a month. That $10, it seems like a little. It's, you know, we've been saying give up a lunch for WPFW, but, you know, here in the D.C. area, you kind of hard-pressed to find $10 lunch. But, you know, for WPFW, we ask that you give that, because it seems like a little bit. WPFW, as we bring it together with our other sustainers in our program, it creates more and more funding. It allows us to budget. It gives us a steady income each month in between pledge drives. That budgeting allows us to plan for the future and to grow. So we invite you to please consider becoming a sustainer for as little as $10 a month and supporting the station that brings you On the Margin, that speaks to our mission each and every week, because it provides a platform for diverse voices and perspectives, which is very important here at WPFW, your independent media source. So again, make your donation, 202-588-9739. Or donate now at WPFWFM.org. You can also Cash App us, $WPFWFM. We look forward to thanking you.
Okay. Thank you, Satira. And thank you, Samir, for being my guest this morning, Samir Bashir. I want to ask this question, which I think is key to your work. And your poems often place an emphasis on the Black body. Mm-hmm. And I want to know how you see the Black body historically, how you see specifically the Black woman's body. You know, when I look at the Black woman body, you know, I immediately think of the work and contributions of Deborah Willis, who looked at the Black woman's body in terms of photography. So talk about how your work fits in with this discussion.
Sure. I mean, you know, thinking visually, you know, I think too, like Elizabeth Catlett, who was so influential to me as a young person. I think about Alison Saar, who I work with, and her sculptural work. And I think too, like, I don't think about the body as this separate thing. Like, this is our aliveness. And it goes back, I think, to what you were asking earlier about experimental writing. Like, I do think of Hughes as an experimental writer, actually. I think whether it's him writing through jazz as a poetry form at that time, I fell in love with the Simple Stories, Jesse B. Simple, back in the day. The idea of taking a working Black man sitting on a bar stool and saying, you're the person whose stories we want to hear. And play on, but not toy with, really. You know, mm-hmm. I think of, you know, Gene Toomer or Zora Neale Hurston or Nella Larsen. All, I think their work is experimental, if only in saying, no, I in this Black body exist. I am the central character here, actually. My life is the story that we need to rely on. And I think one thing, you know, in field theories where I talk about, I really engage Black body theory, which is kind of a physics term where a Black body, like a black hole, is perfectly absorptive. It absorbs all the heat and light it can contain while staying cool, right? Versus a white body, which is kind of like rubber glue, bounces off me, sticks to you. And the way that this so easily maps upon kind of racial politics, especially in the United States, we're just supposed to hit us and hit us and hit us and hit us. And don't you dare react, or now I get to kill you, right? And that idea that our bodies should take whatever you put on them and just keep working, just keep going. Don't dare ask, don't dare want, don't dare need. You know, I mean, Fred Moten has talked about the thing about being in the slavehold is not that there was no desire. It's that all those things were still there and we're still alive. We're still human beings going through this BS, going through these nightmares. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing. Like, our bodies do carry more things. There's a reason why our life outcomes are so drastically different than our white counterparts, because of what our bodies have to be put through and carry. And so then to think about that in terms of our poetry, which I think is something critically alive. And which,
well, let's look at it also in terms of our literature. You know, I'm thinking of Entozaki. I'll bring in three names. Entozaki, when she's talking about, you know, I think her play The Photograph, where, you know, you, the Black body on the slave block is posing. You know, like this, you know, so you have that concept. You have, you know, you bring in the whole thing of the Black body in terms of images of lynching. Okay. Mm-hmm. So that's one. And then I would throw in more recent one in terms of Essex Hemphill commenting on the Robert Mapplethorpe exhibit, where, you know, Black men are reduced down to their penis. How do you, when you as a writer, you know, Samir, How do you draw upon these things? Do you work against it? Do you say, okay, do I put another lynching in the body? Do I celebrate the Black woman's body in a certain way?
Well, you know, to that thing, lynching, no, right? I think, again, you mentioned Claudia Rankine, and I think in Citizen, the way that she presented that very famous lynching photo, while taking the hanging Black body out of the picture and focusing us, the viewer, the reader, on the white body standing all around, comically enjoying this. And it's like, actually, you don't get us as your spectacle anymore. You look at yourself.
Right.
This is you doing this. This is not about the horrible thing you're doing to us. This is that you have the consciousness to do this and laugh. Take my body out of it. Deal with your psychosis, quite frankly. Mm-hmm. And that's, I think, one of the things that for us, like, am I writing against... I'm writing in the context of, you know, I'm not necessarily even writing against our oppression. I'm writing while living through our oppression.
Well, that seems that you're taking it as an artist, you're moving beyond those writers who are writing in terms of dealing with their work as resistance. It seems like all of a sudden you say, okay, as opposed to us playing defense, we're going to play offense.
First of all, yes. Second of all, absolutely. Like, at some point, like, I'm not just fighting back. I'm standing my ground. And you know, if you're going to run at me, run at my fist. Don't, like, you know, I'm not going to stand here with my face open to take it and turn the other cheek again and again and again. In fact, you don't get either cheek. And that's, and in fact, what I'm going to do is hold this mirror up in front of my face. Look at you. Look at how you're running at me. What's wrong with you? Stop it.
Why don't you read, you were talking about the black body and you were also talking about physics. Read the black body radiation that's in Field Theories, your other book.
Sure. Black body radiation, that's interesting. A lot of people like me to read this because thinking
about how it would be read.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
And so this is, and again, this is really mathematically laid out in an engagement.
Yeah, in fact, I'll hold it up for people who have Zoom.
There we go. They can see,
right? but for the radio listener, they'll just have to imagine.
Yeah, so witness equals vulnerability. Therefore, take it. Therefore, crack whip. Plus, endure. Because punishment enjoyed equals breathe in, plus or minus breathe out. Because smoke stench is less than or equal to secret, is less than or equal to what if you're running? Therefore, what if you're running? Because what if you're running? Therefore, witness.
Hey, that's Samir Bashir reading from her book, Field Theories. Let's go back up there. And I'm looking at how you read this poem. I felt I was taking a Hebrew class because you were reading from left to right and right to left. So I mean, what happened? If I was a teacher, I could not teach or recite this poem the way you just did. You know,
what?
I would probably, and maybe that's the beauty in terms of if I walk into a gallery, I'm looking at, everyone looks at the artwork differently.
Mm-hmm.
But go ahead.
Well, no, and yet, the way I've scored this on the sheet, it's a path that you follow. It's a road I've cut out of the forest here. And so, yes, we start on the left, and then it winds like a river over to the right, and then down and back to the left, and then down and over to the right where we start, and then we move down to the end. So it is one fluid line that you read through, rather than left to right, like English, rather than right to left, like Hebrew or Arabic. I'm following the river.
Okay, let's make this more complicated for you. Okay, I accept all of that. Then I'm asking the question, how are you using white space on the page, was how to get into topography. Also, we know that when we look at your work, you have an interest in maps and cartography.
Absolutely.
So that seems like you're creating a map on this page, and you're also using white space in a way. And I'm just looking at how, if we were, I mean, this is radio.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so we're talking about your poem, and I can't read it,
right.
You know, like I'm in church, and so
right.
I have to say, okay, I'm asking you to sort of move, I guess, be like a conceptual artist, explain what you're doing.
Yeah, so, and I think, I love this question, Ethelbert, because in the end, the page is just the map. That's not the poem. I'm always very clear, like this. But this is the ink on tree form of the poem. This is simply a delivery system. Okay. The poem is what happens when I'm reading this and you're hearing this and we're making this thing together. So if we were in church, say, and you're listening to this, this is the music. The music isn't in the book. The music isn't even in the lyrics. Music is in the song we make with the lyrics. And so how do I use the white space? I use it, you know, like a score sheet. I'm hoping to put this poem down in text on a page so that you, with your body as your instrument, can pick it up and play it exactly.
But you also have some score sheets, and I hope this helps. I mean, there's some notes that I could turn a page and I say, okay, I got to play this. Okay.
Right.
And then you've got like a page here, lessons learned from Samir, that it looked like I can put my little notes in here.
Absolutely.
It looked like a little notebook. There's one name I was looking at in your list that I didn't see, and whose book I felt was very similar to yours, who I interviewed a couple of years ago. That's Olio by Tehembe Jess.
That
he said, you gotta take this book apart, you know, build it back up. And I said, this is what, you know, Samir Bashir is doing. She's forcing me to take this book apart, write in it, put it up on a piano, play some part pages of it, and then maybe I understand what you're doing.
You know, or you could just go to the link in the back. You don't have to play it. You can go to the Spotify link and you can hear it. You know, there's a whole choir singing it. You know, and so, you know, almost as if, you know, you went to an audiobook of this and heard me.
See what you just said. You see, now you said that, right? And I got friends who probably listen to this show that said, yeah, but It's just like Nikki Giovanni with Truth on the Way when she had that gospel choir. I'm gonna Porsche right this, man.
We're gonna take a look. There's a choir singing it, and there's a choir because yes, of course we're in a gospel tradition, right. but it's not gospel music.
Right.
It's real. I mean, Dark Matters is, you know, Joelle and I created this through the pandemic. It's really, again, how do we survive this?
Okay.
And survival, I think, is, you know, much less thrival, as I might call it. You know, a goal of ours is not, is first we have to make it through this.
Right. Trial. And we've just made it through the first half of our show. Samir.
Right.
So we're going to do that. We're going to take a little break. My guest today is Samir Bashir. And we're in talking. We have a wonderful discussion. Her new book is How I Hope This Helps. It's a new book that's published by Nightbolt Press. Samir Bashir is also the June Jordan Visiting Scholar at Columbia University. The show's on the margin. My name is Ethelbert Miller. The station's WPFW 89.3 FM.
This is your social justice calendar for the week of December 15th, 2025. On Thursday, December 18th from 6 to 9 p.m. in the space of Ifade, Wanda will host its second Sisterhood Supper, Kwanzaa Celebration, a night of food, fellowship, culture, and collective purpose, located on 1734 20th Street, Northwest DC. For more info, visit imwanda.org. Also on Thursday, December 18th at 7 p.m., Human Rights First and CASA will host a screening and discussion of Crackdown, a new documentary from the award-winning Fault Lines team at Al Jazeera English, investigating Trump's immigration crackdown from court arrest to deportations without due process. For more info, visit busboysandpoets.com. WPFW's social justice calendar connects you to grassroots activism in the DMV. Submissions can be emailed to socialjustice@wpfw.org. Please include the name, date, and address of the event. This is due by Thursday at 5 p.m. at least 1 week in advance of your event. And don't forget to donate to our Winter Pledge Drive. WPFW's social justice calendar helps build a better world, one broadcast at a time.
Okay, we're back on the margin with my guest, Samir Bashir. Samir, before I ask you additional questions, Satira, how are we doing in terms of raising money this hour?
Well, we're actually doing okay. We have two people to thank at this time. We want to thank our friend in Bethesda. Our friend in Bethesda says to WPFW, thanks for all of your outstanding programming and the community you are building and sustaining in these bewildering times. Well, thank you, friend in Bethesda, because you are helping WPFW to work towards these goals. So thank you. Our friend went to our website to make their generous donation at WPFWFM.org. We also want to thank Michelle in Washington, D.C. Thank you, Michelle, for your generous support of WPFW. It looks like Michelle called the donation line at 202-588-9739. You can also cash app us at $WPFWFM.org. You know, across this country, books are being banned. Pulled from shelves, the government is inserting itself in classrooms and curriculum, criminalizing the truth. At WPFW, we refuse to let the lies replace the legacy of the people who come before us and the legacy that people are laying down to move forward into the future. Because education is liberation. And at WPFW, every program is a teach-in. Every conversation is a chance for us to grow our consciousness, because at WPFW, this is community education on the airways. At WPFW, this is community input and community output, because at WPFW, you, the listener, your voice is what makes the difference. We don't have huge corporate sponsorships. We don't have commercials. We don't even have a university backing us. What we have is you, the listener. The majority of all of our funding is from individual donors like you, and you help us keep wonderful programs like On the Margin, who is bringing you authors and books each and every week during these times when books seem to be illegal. Educating yourself, reading, just becoming aware of different voices and stories, that the things that tie us together as human beings and community. We are being pulled apart, and WPFW is striving each and every day to help bring people together. And On the Margin is one of the programs that helps us do that. Give us a call. Make your donation. 202-588-9739. You can also visit us on our website. There's a big red button that says donate now at WPFWFM.org. We accept Cash App at $WPFWFM.org. We invite you to please join this discussion, join this experiment. 202-588-9739.
Okay, thank you, Satira. Samia, I want to ask you, I mean, people can't see this, but you have, there's four drawings of a woman in a jar, okay? and the jars are different in terms of when one looks at the top of how they're corked. You have one, a woman washing her hair. Second drawing, it's just her severed head. And the third, it's a woman covering her face, or one, her hair has been cut. And then you have a last drawing in which the hands are reaching up as if a figure's either drowning or pleading for help. I looked at those images, and then I looked at your poem, Overheard. And I'm just going to pull out some extras because it seems as if you are the woman in the jar. Okay. Mm-hmm. And you have a thing where you talk about an interesting concept, quiet invisibility. Mm-hmm. Then you also talk about how you left the Bay Area for New York City in the 1990s because I needed the kind of pressure that can shatter as well as shape. I thought that was very interesting. You also mentioned that a thing that can drive a body to distraction is pain. And you talk about how, in fact, the matter is it's shattering, the shattering hurts. But then near the end here, you talk about, if I'm honest, most of the world seems completely senseless, even only to me. And then you write about how just being a thing needs writing doesn't mean it needs reading. Many things I write don't need sharing. You've been sharing some of your work with us today. Yeah. And I was wondering, are you making an exception for us? And also getting back to, are you that woman in the jar?
Well, you know, interestingly, I think, you know, anything that's being published, that's making an exception. You know, if I published it, that doesn't, you know, like I say, everything I write doesn't need publishing. Sometimes I write something just because I need to write it out of my body. So if I'm publishing something, then it's because I'm trying to communicate in some way. I'm trying to reach to you with this work. June Jordan, we mentioned, you know, said, you know, poetry is not a shopping list. It's not a soporific daydream or a bumper sticker sloganeering. No, it's like, it's not just out there to be out there. I want this work to reach you. I want to touch you. I want to communicate with you. I'm one with you. I really believe in our oneness. And so this is me reaching a hand out, perhaps like in the glass jar, which is what you're seeing there. So what that is Allison Saar, who I worked with, and those five pieces are collectively a piece called Hades DWP, Department of Water and Power. And so it's built on the five rivers of Hades. And that's the poem that you'll see on the facing page with each piece. And the way that that originally lived, we worked, it's a sculpture. And there are five large glass jars filled with water of different colors representing the five rivers of Hades. And this is based really discussing this idea of the floods that take our communities out again and again. And, you know, we're thinking about Katrina, but if you go back another 100 years to New Orleans, a huge flood, which basically allowed them to re-enslave us, Black people, we had to wear tags. You couldn't leave the space. We were then re-enslaved to rebuild the area, and we could not leave. And we had to have these tags on saying where we were supposed to work, what we could do, you know, freedom, non-freedom papers. And on those, on each of those jars are these poems printed on linen tags hanging from the jars. Each jar has the poem that goes with it, et cetera. And so those sculptures the water comes up to various levels, and not the what you see there is etched on glass. Mm. We then went back a couple of years later and remade that as an artist's book. It's a very limited edition artist book. There's only 18 copies in the world. And we went and she lino cut those images, and then we printed them and recreated the cloth tags. Mm. And so now you have a large, you know, it's about 16 by 16 square that you open up, and it becomes a different piece. And now we've recreated it by printing that those images here with the poems next to them. And that's why you see this blackout paper with the whispering behind it about each river, which has its own kind of poem, really dealing with how we, maybe my black body, perhaps me in my black body, living in this body, and dealing with this hell.
You know, I felt when I was started reading your book, the first couple of poems were very autobiographical. Mm-hmm. And there was one question I wanted to ask you, and it's sort of linked. We mentioned influences earlier. You mentioned Jane Cortez. Yeah. And I was always looking at the way we sometimes look at African-American music. We're looking at how music goes from, like, say, New Orleans to Chicago. I was wondering, in terms of you, sort of like Jane Cortez, you go from the West Coast to the East Coast. Mm-hmm. And I was wondering, you know, how does your sound change?
Right. And I start in the Midwest, right? I'm from outside of
Michigan. Right, Michigan.
So, you know, yeah, exactly. Motown was right up the street when I grew up. And so sound has always been a part of that. You know, my mother, you know, she started reading black poetry when I was born, you know, so I always, was wrestling with these ideas and thinking through what that looks like. When we think about experimental and what that means here too, Jane Cortez, but I also think about, you know, Audre Lorde, who invented the biomythography as a form with Zami, a new spelling of my name, and saying, like, I've got to tell my story, but I got to tell it this way. Mm. And because honestly, you can't imagine me anyway. So let me imagine me for you. And so this idea of even, you know, being autobiographical, once again, it's autobiographical in the way that I'm more interested in the we than the I. Mm-hmm. And so when I talk about us, you know, there's like the us black people, there's us women, there's us queers, there's us Americans, there's all of these us's, but also there's just the general us of humanity. When we get into field, there's the general us that is intergalactic. That's like this star dust stuff. You know, and so I'm really interested in talking to you because you are me. I need us to come together, to come up here.
Hmm. You know, when I look at
your survival is my survival.
You know, when you talk about your survival and you talk about space, I was looking at like Robert Hayden, American Journal.
Yes.
You know, I was looking at that poem. I was also looking at
Ann Arbor,
how we. Right. And then if we're also dealing with how many people today are talking about Afrofuturism, mm-hmm. you know, and it seems as if, and this is my question to you, it seems like a lot of your work could probably begin as an installation first. Mm-hmm. But then I was wondering in terms of how did that installation now move into like a book? You know, how do you take something, you know, in terms of a physical structure? Because you talk about sculpting in your work. And so I wonder, how do you sculpt a poem?
Well, I mean, so one thing you'll notice, and I hope this helps, and I'll hold this up for the Zoom people, is you'll see what I call standards, which are these huge, you know, pages with the much larger text that's been designed in a particular way. And mm-hmm. The standards are part of the installation show, which I originally made. It was first shown in early 2020 in Rome before the world shut down. And what these are 1 by 2 meter sailcloths. I call them standards because I engage them much like old sailor flag language, you know, where you kind of like have to hold, you know, before we were all texting each other, you know, move, I'm a boat. But, you know, and this is like these huge standards. They are large. And the way it's installed, you move your body through them. I think
you know, I'm listening to you right now. And I said, Samia must have, she must dream a lot. She must have like a dream notebook or something like that, because this stuff is just coming out of her head. You know, and something must be going on that you're not talking about.
I'm dreaming right now, Ethelbert. This is a dream talking to you about this. No, I mean, no, but for real, you know, like you're someone whose work has inspired me and almost everybody I know. So like that, I think that is a critical part of this. you know? And that's why, like, as I was saying with I hope this helps in the installation, I think about it as a performance poem where my body comes out and your body goes in. You move through these standards.
Let's go back to field theories. And I want you to read a couple of poems because you talk about John Henry.
Yes.
But I like the fact that you also mentioned Polly Ann because we forget about Polly Ann. You know, we forget about Polly Ann the way we forget, we deal with Adam and Eve, but not Lilith. You know what I
mean? Right, exactly. Exactly. And meanwhile, you know, at the end of John Henry, Polly Ann is the one who picks up the hammer.
That's right. Right. So why don't you read a couple of those and just talk about how you got into, you know, John Henry? You know, was there someone talking up to you when you were growing up?
Yeah, thank you. No, John Henry. Yeah, exactly. So again, you know, I challenged I taught a workshop for CaviCon and Black Poets here in New York City. And really, one of the things I did early on is challenge us to think, you know, I had us thinking about the future. You're talking about Afrofuturism. What does it mean to be Black poet in New York City 50 years from now? But also, like, what does this mean writing through in this moment? We're American writers. And man, as Black folks, it's easy to resist that identity as American when, as I say in one of those pieces, and I hope this helps, one thing that's like my home has always been clear that it would rather kill us all than let me live.
We're Afro-Canadians.
Right, you know, exactly. But and yet not. My tax money is killing these people. Right. As much as the country's killing me, I'm also a part of this country killing other people. And I like that's not inescapable. I also, as a Black American, am part of the people making the culture that's exported all over the world. I've never been in an airport anywhere on the planet that's not piping in Black American music. Mm-hmm. I don't care what side of the globe I'm on, that's what's playing. And that's always been the case everywhere I've been. And so when I think about John Henry, our American kind of mythology, John Henry is kind of the Black person that transcends that, like Babe in the Blue Ox. There's John Henry. That's where we live in this.
And this seems to be connected to the Black body that you were talking about
earlier. Exactly. Very much connected to the Black body. Very much connected to this idea of Black body theory, too, where his body was supposed to take it and take it and take it. But you know what happens? He collapses. He dies.
What happens? Is there a connection between John Henry, your work, and how we are dealing today with technology?
Exactly. Well, listen. Yeah, how we're dealing today with technology, first of all, is this idea of the way that we are supposedly the most connected we've ever been while simultaneously being the most isolated we've ever been.
Well, let's hear the first. Once you read the John Henry opens his mouth, Polly Ann jumps her broom, and then John Henry's first real swing. Those are three.
Got it. So these are the first three poems. And this is a sonnet cycle originally published by you and your folks as well back in the day. And so what it is.
Don't make it sound that old, like back in the day.
Back in the day. It's like 5 minutes ago to me. You know what I mean? But yeah, so these are songs, as is this mythology. John Henry, these stories come to us through work songs. And so I think I'm employing the sonnet form as a work song here. So it starts with John Henry opens his mouth. I can tell your future too. Want to hear it? Most don't, and fine by me, ain't got nothing but time now, no how. Hands been full since day one, swinging. Swinging. Was I born with it? The night I came shocked mama and daddy to the corners of our old dark quarters. Call washed down to the floor where I tore it, threw it. Fists swinging and grasping for air. When I said, Mama, she dropped me clear to the floor and jumped back quick. Mama, I'ma be, but she dropped her head and her hands and cried, Papa, I'ma be steel, I started. I'ma die with my hammer, was I born with it? Mama, don't cry. I'ma be. So the next sonnet is called Polly Ann Jumps Her Broom. And the thing to understand about these sonnets is that each one starts by picking up the last line of the one before it. I swear I wasn't born to cry, so I'd be a lie if I say I wept when I left my mama's house. Like I ain't know life up here would be hard scrabble rough. What's not? And I loved the blue he grew from his eyes and spread to the syrup sap dip drip of his dipstep. And I loved how he loved mine. And how could I know he'd risk us? And for what? For what? Why build us a life here just to end it? I kept dry eyes, I swear. I stood stronger than I looked. I stood fragile and heavy as a honeybee. So did he. A man's heart rocks like mine for the kind of love found and fed that tells him he ain't dead. So what you'll also notice as we move from sonnet to sonnet, we have John Henry speaking, and then we have Polly Ann speaking. We have John Henry speaking. And how this begins is John Henry begins in couplets. Polly Ann begins in quatrains. As we move across these poems, they switch. They move into each other's forms in different ways. So now we're back to John Henry, John Henry's first real swing. I stood hungry, near dead, and the man said, my ham would give us shelter, keep us fed. That's what he said. But instead, I was drove up these craggy mountain roads. I was gave another hammer and a crust of bread and not enough slop to anger my plate. I ate what I could. I practiced on wood. I split rocks as the night stretched long. I chipped blocks of ice when I couldn't sleep, couldn't keep. Listen, whether it kills me later or now, I'm gone. I know how. I know why. I got these 40 pounds of firebolt, the color of sorrow-smoked eyes that I lift and drop. Lift and drop. Lift and drop. Lift and...
You're listening to Samia Bashir reading from her book, Field Theories. Thank you for reading those poems about John Henry and Polly Ann. You know, there's the lines I was looking at in the Polly Ann Jumps Her Broom. A man's heart rocks like mine for the kind of love found and fed that tells him he ain't dead. I mean, that's extremely powerful language there.
Thank you.
I want to come back as we come to the end of our show. I want, you know, when I introduce you as Samia Bashir, as a poet, artist, and educator. I want you to talk about, the last few minutes about being the educator, because you said something interesting. And I'm thinking about Troy Derricotte on this case, because you've been talking about Coffee Conum. What does it mean for you as a black woman standing in front of black students who are all want to be poets?
Troy Derricotte, again, Detroit. Yeah. My grandparents, you know what I mean?
Like, running a funeral parlor out there.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Exactly. A poetry parlor, you know. Jess, I am the Jess. You know what I mean? All, you know, Detroit, don't sleep. But but what does it mean? I mean, I think when I think about my teachers who, you know, again, this is life-saving. You know, I was speaking, I was on the phone for like an hour and a half last night with one of my former students from Columbia who's kicking butt out there with her work. But also, you know, I know what it's like to have been a young person trying to dream this life, trying to figure this out. That's what that piece overheard that you mentioned is really kind of like, what does it mean? How does one build an artist's life? You know, how do I do that? And overheard, my main thing is like, first, like, you got to be in service. Right. You got to be in the room. You got to be listening. And
but you're also a part of a community. You know, you have you're not like James Baldwin looking for Buford Delaney. You know, I mean, you've got a community.
Right, but that's on purpose. And again, that goes to Kaveh Conum, that goes to Derricotte and Cornelius Ely, who built that. And that's why Emba and Jess and you know, like all these people, we know each other because they put us together and made sure we know each other. In the same way, my grandparents made sure my cousins and I all grew up together.
Samia Bashir, I'm happy that I know you. Okay. And we're coming to our end of our show. You know, you're a person I wanted to talk to, you know, for a long time, and because I felt that what you were doing was very interesting work. And so I want to thank you for being on The Margin today. My guest, as I was talking to for the last hour, has been Samia Bashir. She's the author of I Hope This Helped, and I Hope This Does Help. It's her new book that is published from Nightboat Books, actually. And as I mentioned earlier, Samia Bashir is a June Jordan Visiting Scholar at Columbia University. My name is Ethelbert Miller, and I think maybe Satira was going to close us out with a final pitch, but I want to thank you, Samia, okay?
Thank you, Ethelbert.
All right.
Yes, it's been a pleasure. We want to thank the Quander family in Silver Spring. Thank you so much for your generous donation. Joanne of Bethesda, Maryland, who says community education is liberation. Thank you to WPFW. Thank you to Ethelbert. And thank you, Samia, for lifting us up. We want to also thank Elaine in Washington, D.C., who also went to our website at WPFWFM.org to make their donation. We want to say thank you to Sandy, who says, E. Miller, I love this woman. Samia is great. Thank you for having her on. So thank you from me as well. That's 202-588-9739 or WPFWFM.org. You can also Cash App us at $WPFWFM. Continue to donate to WPFW. We have made our goal for this hour, but keep calling, keep giving, because we've got a goal for the drive of $95,000, and we haven't made that yet, so keep calling.
Okay, well, I'm out of here. Take care. All right, thank you.
Recording.
Hi, this is Jim Byers, host of the Latin Flavor Classic Edition. For nearly 5 decades, support from listeners like you has kept WPFW's wheels rolling. In fact, the single largest category of donations comes from those who donate an unused car to the station. That's right, running or not. Even a car sitting idle that needs thousands of dollars in repairs can do wonders for WPFW. If you can't drive it, donate it. WPFW will get the proceeds, and you'll get a tax break. Go to WPFWFM.org or call 1-866-WPFW-CAR. That's 1-866-973-9227 for more information. Help WPFW continue building a better world, one broadcast at a time.
Thank you for supporting WPFW. When you make a pledge, you'll receive a short survey with your receipt or on our website or in an upcoming e-blast. Please take a few moments to share your thoughts. Your feedback helps strengthen our programming, better serve our community, and keep WPFW strong. We truly value your voice.
This season, Joy is taking over Anacostia. From December 11th through the 22nd, Anacostia is celebrating 12 Days of Joy along Marion Barry and MLK Jr. Avenue. New Southeast Festive. Free events and experiences from the annual Emoja Holiday Market to hands-on maker workshops and live concerts. With a Joy Pass, there will be surprise drops of joy with prizes and treats at participating businesses. 12 Days of Joy and Holiday Magic in Anacostia. Art2Gogo.org for more info.
Fellow members and supporters of WPFW, as you contemplate your year in giving, if you are required to take a minimum distribution from your IRA, please join many of our donors and make a qualified charitable distribution from your IRA to WPFW. A QCD can satisfy all or part of your RMD from your IRA, and you can exclude that amount from your taxable income. To learn more about these and other tax-wise giving methods, please visit our website or send us an email at plangiving@wpfw.org. And as always, thank you so much for your continued support.
Mutual aid, the act of taking care of each other, comes in many forms. One such form is supporting WPFW. At a time when so many are hurting, if you are doing well financially and want to do good, we invite you to give the gift of WPFW. Emancipatory Media is truly the gift that keeps on giving. A tax-deductible donation can be made anytime at WPFWFM.org or from Sunday, December 14th through Saturday, December 20th during our pledge drive by calling 800-222-9739. It is your continued support that allows us to do the work of building a more equitable world, one broadcast at a time.
Inviting all DC hand dancers, Philly boppers, Chicago steppers, Carolina shaggers, and West Coast swingers. The Treehouse Dreamers venue offers dance music from Motown and more every Friday, 1 to 5 p.m. at 4722 14th Street Northwest. DJ Jam and Dave and other fine DJs provide an atmosphere offering seniors socialization while getting much needed quality movement through familiar tunes and dance every Friday. Details at 301-922-4064. That's 301-922-4064. WPFW offering wellness through dance, one activity at a time.
Welcome to the Collision. The Collision, where sports and politics smash. Thursdays at 10 a.m. and on iTunes and Google Play. WPFW, Washington, D.C.
Yo, peace, this is Rod Stars.
Peace, this is G1, and together we're Rebel Diaz. When we in the DMV, you know we're listening to that People Power Radio, WPFW, Washington, your station for jazz and justice. Let's go.